It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Friday, December 15th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
We are going to be creating an appropriate environment so that our diasporians can then be comfortable to come back home and interact and set up businesses, secure businesses in a very successful economy of Zimbabwe.
That was Zimbabwe's Foreign Minister Sibusiso Moyo talking about the new government's plan for change. Good evening, I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. Today in Zimbabwe, the ruling ZANU-PF party confirmed the rule of Emmerson Mnangagwa. He told the gathering that the country was on a new trajectory. The Herald newspaper says he told the meeting that the party ideology, rules, and regulations were being daily desecrated by some in power close to former President Robert Mugabe. He added that it was no longer the party that he had pledged his loyalty to. The military's forced retirement of Mr. Mugabe and support for Mr. Mnangagwa was a return to basic party rules. "We must never lower our guard again," the new president told ZANU-PF members. He also pledged to have multi-party elections next year and to introduce reforms to boost the economy. From Harare, Kudzai Zinawashe has more.
ZANU-PF's special congress today has confirmed Mnangagwa as the president and first secretary of ZANU-PF. He is also the party's candidate for 2018 elections. Patrick Chinamasa is the party secretary for legal affairs, and he has been assisting Mnangagwa in the special congress. In his address to the new president, who was in attendance, he spoke about the ZANU-PF Central Committee that met on the 19th November and brought historic change to the country.
The special session of the Central Committee went on to appoint you as interim president of our party pending ratification by this extraordinary Congress. It went further to nominate you as a nominee to fill the vacancy of in the state presidency.
Today's meeting comes after the military and war veterans forced the retirement of former President Robert Mugabe and supported Mnangagwa's rise to power. Christopher Mutswangwa is the chairman of Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association. He gave a message of solidarity to those at the meeting.
I want to start by saluting you, Comrade President, and this Congress for the elevation it is giving you to become the new leader of Zimbabwe. There is a new hope for Zimbabwe, a different hope after 37 years. We are delighted by that development. I want to say we have traveled a long way in dealing with the G40.
G40 is the ZANU-PF faction the military referred to as criminals around the former President Mugabe. Most senior members of the group are under 40 years of age and are said to be loyal to former First Lady Grace Mugabe. Since the military came to power, they have been expelled from the party. Mnangagwa has been working to create optimism among most Zimbabweans. He spoke of a way forward for the nation and his party in his keynote address today.
"Now we must be about politics and economics. After all, the best politics emerge from the marketplace where livelihoods are made. I urge the party to introspect and self-adjust in this regard, to oppose resolutely tribalism, regionalism, nepotism, corruption, racism, religious fanatism."
He further touched on a lot of development plans that will attract foreign direct investment. Mnangagwa was expected to conclude with multiple appointments, including two vice presidents. However, he has deferred that announcement for 2 days, though he did make various other party appointments. Critics say, whichever way it goes, the vice presidents will need to strike a balance between ethnic groups and gender. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Joining us here in the studio to talk about the conference and other issues in the news this week is our colleague, Tanunoka Wande of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Welcome, Tanunoka.
Thank you so much.
So today, ZANU-PF had their annual Congress. What are some of the reactions that you're hearing?
There were a few things that were left out. The Women's League, for example, had always campaigned for the inclusion of a woman among the vice presidency. But then just a few days before the Congress, it was decided that it would not be debated at the Congress. The ZANU-PF Congresses are very carefully choreographed. You know, they want to show that they, you know, they agree on almost everything. Yet most of these things are agreed upon before the Congress itself. So it becomes more of a rubber stamping exercise than anything else. However, this issue is not going to go away. I think I see the Women's League pushing harder. And I think this is one of the reasons why the president decided not to nominate or to reveal whose choices he is going to have for the vice president. Mm-hmm. So wait for a few days, like you said, then he will tell the nation who his assistants will be.
Okay. And also about the Congress, could you tell us a little more about the arrest that has happened?
We were doing a live news broadcast earlier today, mm-hmm. and I was talking to one of our correspondents on the scene. I wanted to close the show and ask him about the Congress, something about the Congress. But before I could do that, he just jumped in and told us that he was looking at an arrest that was in progress. Apparently, some guy showed up at the Congress holding up a big banner, mm-hmm. that said that Mnangagwa, that's the president, killed my relative. So the man was arrested by the military and taken away. At the time when we were on air, we didn't get enough more information about it, but we hope to get some more information in the next few minutes.
Okay, but on that note, why would the military have been the one doing the arresting as opposed to the police?
That is very, very interesting. This is a ZANU-PF Congress where people are supposed to come and give their opinions for the benefit or for the sake of their political party. But then something goes wrong during a civilian, ceremony, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then it's the military that comes in to arrest people. His offense was not military. It was, civilian. It was, the military had no role in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But their mere presence at functions like this is a very scary indication that they don't intend to go back to the barracks anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. On that note, have there been any other incidences of the military doing the police's work?
Several human rights organizations have been talking about it, especially in the last 2-3 days, including the Zimbabwe Peace Project, who have itemized incidences where the military, the soldiers, were abusing civilians. And this doesn't seem to be, stopping at all. It keeps on going and it keeps on growing. The unfortunate thing about it is that the military have become the ultimate power. There is nowhere else to complain. They are the ultimate. You can't go to the police because the police are under the military, and they are the only people who can dish out justice, if we should call it that. So we are in a quagmire here. We don't know how long this is going to last. And
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we ran out of time. Thank you for stopping by. That was VOA's Tanunoka Wande of VOA Zimbabwe Service.
Thank you very much.
Earlier today, VOA Zimbabwe Service, Tanunoka Wande, spoke with Zimbabwe's foreign minister. Retired Major General Sibusiso Moyo said the new government is focused on moving the country forward.
Our primary interest at the moment is economic development and emancipation of our people. And in that regard, We are expecting that our function is going to be attracting foreign direct investment into Zimbabwe and then also create markets where products are going to be exported into the world, which would then direct and stimulate directed productivity within Zimbabwe. And above all, try and attract all the tourists so that we can have a market share of the world's tourist attraction. And this is going to be also in collaboration with also our own people who are in the diaspora. We are going to be enhancing our collaboration, especially through the consular service organization.
While we are on the topic of the people in the diaspora, do you have an official position yet as to how you are going to deal with the millions of Zimbabweans who are outside? Let's talk about maybe in terms of extending voting rights to them.
In as far as the issue of voting is concerned, we are going to follow the law and we are going to be constitutionally compliant throughout. Secondly, in as far as attracting them back, we are going to be creating an appropriate environment so that our diasporians can then be comfortable to come back home and interact and set up businesses, secure businesses in a very successful economy of Zimbabwe.
Given that you have got yourself a military background, do you think you'll be welcomed by other countries?
I am a Zimbabwean, and being a Zimbabwean, I've got all the rights of representing my country in any capacity. And therefore, those who would like to interact with us, we are going to do so. But those who are uncomfortable, then that would be unfortunate.
What do you expect to do differently in this ministry?
It's differently because already the personalities are different. His Excellency, the Comrade Mnangagwa, has already indicated through his inaugural speech the direction which the country must be moving towards. And you have already seen the latest budget, which has been pronounced by the Minister of Finance, which is a clear indication of the direction which this government is taking and the number of policy reviews which are coming up. So, naturally, whilst it is the same government, ZANU-PF government, but it is obviously doing things differently because of the personalities.
On international trade, what are your objectives and how are you going to turn things around?
On international trade, we are opening up all the friends and reassuring the friends that we must double up all the interactions which we have been having and the trade in between the various nations. But with those who had low levels of trade between ourselves, we are saying we have created an environment which is more attractive and we are engaging them. And we are saying re-engagement is going to be our priority so that we can trade with the rest of the world. We need the market share of the world so that our products can land and we can also get FDI so that our GDP can grow at a phenomenal rate.
What do you think we hope to see in your ministry?
Efficiency.
Efficiency.
And deliverables, yes.
How do you expect to turn things around in that respect?
There are many issues which we are going to be doing and which are under our plans. And we shall be advising you as we move on.
You haven't traveled outside the country yet. What country or countries are you going to visit first and why?
Remember, foreign policy is an extension of domestic policy. That's why it is important to sort out issues domestically and then start moving out with a concrete and symbiotic message. But we are going to be starting soon, and naturally we'll start with our own neighborhood.
You have been quoted as criticizing opposition party officials who are on American trip and European trip, saying that your party, your government, needs a little more time to turn things around. But there are those also who believe that ZANU-PF does not change.
It's not an issue about ZANU-PF. We must be responsible citizens. We are all Zimbabweans, and we are not a government of a party. We are a government of all the people of Zimbabwe. And therefore, when there are issues which need dialogue, they must be discussed in-house. We don't just say, if we have got certain grievances, 10 days of a government into office, and then we don't really restrict personalities going outside the country. It is not our desire. But we are saying the issues which must be discussed in different forums must be those which resonate with national interests. Because if we are going to accept that a particular government must maintain a certain position where we know that there are sanctions which hurt the people of Zimbabwe, then we are not sure exactly whom are you representing. If you've got a problem, let's talk about it. Otherwise, we are not saying it's everybody who is in the opposition who is probably doing that. But we are just saying whatever was done by those specific individuals is not in the national interest of the people of Zimbabwe.
Many Zimbabweans took to social media to express their concerns about the meeting of ZANU-PF's extraordinary Congress today. For the first time since 1963, former President Robert Mugabe was not in attendance. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is the ZANU-PF first secretary, according to the Herald, says ZANU-PF and the government ministries should forge symbiotic relationships to deliver on promises they make to the people. Here are some of the reactions from social media.
Patnos Majoni says, honestly, ZANU-PF has become a real party of the moment. The president speaks real sense. Surely that is the party the people have been looking for.
Bella Nore says, we should instead be more concerned about and demand the involvement of the youth in governance than eloquency.
Susan Vumbe says, what is important is the delivery of jobs and decent lives for Zimbabweans. The fluency in English or good accent means nothing if people are suffering.
Samuel says, so when are the new vice presidents going to be announced and sworn in? I hope there is at least one female amongst them walking the talk on gender equality in politics.
Langa says, I do not see the reason to shout the one-party slogan when you are addressing the whole nation. It makes those who are not ZANU-PF feel left out.
Webster says, when will ZBC News Online air opposition party congresses live?
And with that, we conclude our look at some of the latest comments on the ZANU-PF Congress on social media. You're listening to Zimbabwe Today live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Kutanai Matetwa in Washington, D.C.
At 47 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
A diplomatic mission made up of Zimbabwean opposition members is raising an uproar at home. The trip includes some senior members of one of the opposition alliances. Many Zimbabweans are reproaching them for undertaking their trip. Our correspondent, Taurai Shava, brings us more from Bulawayo.
The trip has ignited serious debate on the country's social media platform. Many of the remarks are critical of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance for, as the writers say, selling out to the West. Others support the trip. The journey has been tainted by negative reports on the recent appearance of former Finance Minister Tendai Biti before a U.S. Congressional Committee on International Relations in Washington. He allegedly asked the U.S. to withhold aid to the new administration in Harare and maintain targeted sanctions against some top ruling ZANU-PF officials and entities linked to the ruling party. They were introduced by the U.S. several years ago in protest over the country's human rights record and issues concerning the lack of transparent and democratic governance. There have also been questions over who sponsored the trip. Some say it was bankrolled by Western interests bent on pushing an imperialist agenda, a line that has in the past been used by former President Robert Mugabe in his anti-Western stance. Tinashe Moyo is a Zimbabwean PhD candidate in peace building at a South African university. He says if the opposition members did ask for sanctions, it is morally wrong as such measures hurt ordinary citizens the most. In the past, U.S. officials have pointed out that high-ranking individuals suspected of corruption have been targeted, while Washington continues to provide agricultural and other relief to the public. Butler Tambo works with the Center for Community Engagement, a Bulawayo-based think tank. He says that rather than make such a trip, the opposition alliance should focus its efforts on encouraging Zimbabweans to register to vote in next year's elections. He also says the opposition should by now have a manifesto and should hit the campaign trail to win over potential voters.
ZANU-PF, I think, has already hit the campaign trail, but the opposition has not done much. So they should be focusing on getting people registered, focusing on creating a proper manifesto which they can sell to the people. At the moment, I'm not hearing them talk about what they are going to deliver.
Freelance Zimbabwean journalist Thelma Chikwana, currently based in France, says the opposition has missed the chance to engage the newly installed government of Emmerson Mnangagwa in order to try to bring about positive change.
The opposition has lost its political rudder as far as the interests of Zimbabwe are going forward. It's hardly been 2 weeks since the new government came into place. Let us give them a chance, a fair chance, I mean, and see what happens. Because at this rate, at the rate which opposition are going, there's a risk that they will antagonize relationships with the new dispensation and forego a golden opportunity which they may have. And this definitely jeopardizes dialogue going forward.
Even government itself has criticized the opposition over the trip, with Harare's new foreign affairs minister, retired Major General Sibusiso Moyo, describing it as unpatriotic. But one of Zimbabwe's well-known academics and political commentators, Ibo Mandaza, says the Zimbabwean issue is as much national as it is international, adding that there is nothing wrong with the opposition to be hosted in the U.S. He says no one in the international community has had the courage to describe the events in Harare as the coup that he says it is, and it is dishonest to attack the emissaries for what he calls a frank and honest assessment of the Zimbabwean issue. The members of the delegation themselves have denied that they were on a mission to ask for more sanctions, as alleged. Tabita Kumalo is the deputy spokesperson of the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai. She dismisses the criticism of the diplomatic mission as part of the ZANU-PF propaganda aimed at public opinion. She says the opposition's diplomatic efforts have not been limited to the U.S. and Europe alone.
The diplomatic mission that has been undertaken by the MDC Alliance leadership is all about educating African leaders, European leaders, and American leaders on the need for Zimbabwe government led by President Mnangagwa to heed the call of electoral reforms. As Zimbabwe have gone through so many elections, and all of them have been challenged because they were rigged. So they are going around lobbying for electoral reforms. Amongst those reforms, we are looking at this clearing of the airwaves. Currently, ZBC is only for ZANU-PF. Opposition parties are not allowed to use the media.
As debate about the trip rages, it remains to be seen whether the opposition shall stand vindicated for its efforts or it will be viewed as the puppet of the West, as some allege it to be. Reporting for VOA from Lulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
The Zimbabwean government is cracking down on teachers offering extra lessons to their students for a fee. That's illegal in Zimbabwe. Critics say extra lessons are not necessary if teachers are doing their job well. They say it also does not give students equal and fair opportunities. I spoke with Zimbabwe Teachers Association Chief Executive Officer Sifusiso Ndlovu.
From a professional point of view, extra lessons are not necessary if teaching has been conducted properly. Extra lessons basically can only be done when we are doing probably remediation or correcting misconceptions that students may have. It should not be a normal way of doing teaching to conduct extra lessons. When you see that happening, then you ask yourself, as a parent, what does my child do from morning to evening when they dismiss at school? Then when we look at that from a supervisory point of view, then we wonder whether is there any teaching that happens during normal instructional time. Then as an educator, as a practicing teacher, then you should be asking yourself, what is wrong with my lesson plan and the delivery of my instructions, which makes students always need extra work or extra lessons? So if we are engaging extra lessons for the purposes of consolidating concepts, then it cannot be a regular practice which becomes a problem in the field of teaching. So Professor Mavima is articulating precisely that from a professional teacher's point of view, it may not be necessary that every day becomes a day for extra lessons. We may not commodify education by making it a business enterprise where we raise funds for our upkeep through charging students. That reduces the service that we must be giving to our children. So it is in the correct perspective, therefore, for us to reject the notion of extra lessons as a mode of continuously engaging students, but only as a mode of correcting or extending the understanding of a concept. And this should be rarely used.
Some teachers argued that extra lessons are necessary because not every student learns the same.
This is my point. We cannot have that every student every day is missing a concept. That's the correct point. What we can do now is to ensure that the contact time between the teacher and the student is adequate by creating the appropriate numbers of children in class, which will match appropriate instructional contact between the teacher and the student. So if we have a situation where we don't employ teachers and the teacher-pupil ratio skyrockets to anything like 1 to 70, 1 teacher to 7 students, then you are bound to miss certain students. And when they miss, they will call for remediation. And that is an unfortunate situation. But let me tell you, extra lessons are not a new phenomenon. What is new in the phenomenon here is the charging for extra lessons. We as African teachers, as far back as in the 70s, we engaged in extra lessons. We did help students, but not for a fee. It was for a particularly identified concept which is missed. But if it is now a regular feature of our teaching, then everything is wrong in that data score.
So for my final question, what is your take on the new curriculum? Some have argued that it's too much for the students. There's too much information that they need to take in.
Definitely. This new curriculum is only 12 months old, precisely introduced in terms of practice in January 2017. And this is December 2017. It is time now to evaluate the process of implementing this curriculum. It is time now to evaluate the activities that we have been engaged in. And when we do that, then we can pick the issues which we think were overestimated. And therefore, the issue of formative evaluation is a continuous process. The curriculum itself is spot on. The curriculum itself is the doorway to the 21st century and cannot be ignored. What we need to do now is to tweak its implementation processes. There are a number of challenges at implementation, and we need to improve in that area. No one curriculum which is introduced can be almost perfect. So we have learned in the processes of implementation that we must change certain things. Correctly, we must revisit which areas must be reduced and taught at what level. That's part of our learning.
That was Sifusiso Ndlovu, the chief executive of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association. He was speaking to me from Harare.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Matatwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.